program.
That's right, yes.
Good morning, everyone. The Senate E-12 Budget Division will come to order. Today is Tuesday, February 3, 2015. We have three bills on the agenda: Senate Files 96, 133, and 217. We're going to take Senate File 133 last, but we will have a chance to get to all of the bills. And we're going to start with Senate File 96, Senator Kiffmeyer. And we invite your testifiers to join you, and
right away, so
for those testifiers and subsequent ones, just remember to state your name and who you're representing for our tape. Senator Kiffmeyer, Senate File 96. Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Last time I was before you, I didn't serve on the committee, and I have to say it's a little different to actually have a chair at the table as well and gotten to know all of you better. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, to have your time on the committee today for a very important issue for my district. And overall, Mr. Chairman, though the specific subject of the bill today is Senate File 96, the overall area that we're working on is inequity in education funding across the state. And this, in regards to inequity, has to do with distribution of state dollars. My district is right outside of the metropolitan area. So their salaries, their expenses, all the things that they do are very much in line with the metro. But they do not get that metro-style funding as well. So I have with me today two school superintendents from my district, Superintendent Bezik from the Elk River School District and Superintendent Bailey from the St. Michael Albertville District. And I'm going to have Superintendent Bailey start off the discussion today in regards to the St. Michael Albertville School District.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer, and welcome to the testifiers.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chairperson Weir and Senate Education Committee members. I greatly appreciate the opportunity this morning to have to testify on Senate File 96, which modifies the definition for metro equity for purposes of revenue funding specifically. The bill, very specifically, as you look at it, looks at changing the definition from for qualifying for the metro equity amount from the seven-county metro area to using the definition of the U.S. Census, which adds additional counties, those being Wright, Sherburne, Isanti, and Chisago counties. This definition is used by the U.S. Census to define our metro area, and then as a result, if this change was made, that the districts in those additional four counties would qualify for what is a higher level of equity, actually 25% higher in the formula dealing with equity revenue in the area. So this morning I wish to specifically talk about why that's important to us at the St. Michael Albertville School District, but as well as other school districts that are similarly like us, located geographically within that U.S. Census metro area. This is not a bill that the concept is not new. This came before both the Senate and House last year and was passed on to the omnibus bill. And in the conference committee, however, didn't make it out of the conference committee. So this is a bill. The concept's a little bit different, the definition's a little bit different, but the idea is very much the same. In the end, what we're looking for is equitable funding for school districts, in this case, around the metro area. You obviously, as being involved in education funding, knows that our school funding formula is based around categorical funding, and equity funding being one of those. And from time to time, as a committee and as a Senate and House, you have looked at those categorical bills to make sure that they're working like they were intended, to make sure that the money is distributed as intended and as effective as it was intended to be. And that's what I'm asking you to do today, is to look specifically at the equity revenue bill, and in our mind, to support a different distribution of dollars. We certainly support the concept of categorical programs. That's been something that's been the foundation of school funding. We're simply asking that you look at the distribution of dollars for that. A couple reasons why. I would ask you to look at this from our standpoint. One is it's one way to address what we believe is inequitable funding in regard to schools and specifically around the metro area. Why we think this is a relevant bill, one is we are considered metro. Our characteristics, the Senate and House are looking at transportation that talks about including us, adding lanes on I-94 for the congestion. We have retail centers out there that are used by the metro areas. And quite frankly, Wright County counts is the second in growth in the population since 2000. This adds, so this would be 11 county area. Often this metro area used by the U.S. Census is quoted in many statistics, whether it be realtors, house builders, and such. It's even used for economic development reasons. So it matches a good policy for that definition. We compete, probably the primary reason for the funding is we compete for teachers' salaries, for programming, with other schools in the metro area. In fact, our school district is just adjacent to the seven-county metro area. So teachers that currently work in our area can easily go down the road a few miles and make $10,000 to $15,000 more. And so for us to be competitive to hire and retain teachers, we think it's important that we have some of that same revenue. In summary, this definition supports the reality that we are a metro area, how the public views us as a metro area, how statistics are compiled as a metro area, and more importantly, realizes the costs that we incur in our education and providing educational opportunities to our students in our area. At this time, would you like me to...
Yes, thank you, Superintendent Bailey, and we'll hold on questions until the presentations are over, and then we'll open it up.
And Mr. Chairman, I have a parent from St. Michael Albertville who would also like to make a few comments.
Yes. Welcome.
Thank you.
Name first.
I appreciate you having me here today. My name is Steve Hinkemeyer. I'm from Albertville, and I'm a parent in the school district. I have two children, one that's a sophomore in college and another one that's currently in high school. As a parent and taxpayer, it's concerning to learn about the inequity that has developed when it comes to the school funding. Our school district, as well as others across the state, continues to receive far less funding than some other districts in the state. Districts like ours receive over $1,000 less per student, per student less than the state average. Parents and other taxpayers in our community have increased funding for our schools through referendums and also increases to those referendums. In addition, we pay higher activity fees to cover the cost of the after school programs for our kids. And we feel that a definition change to the metro area is one way that the state can provide a more equitable share of the state funding to our local efforts. A large portion of our community works in the seven county metro area. I personally live in Albertville but work in Burnsville, so I make that commute every single day. But I'm not the only one. Many parents in our community work in downtown Minneapolis and in the surrounding suburbs. But it's not just work that we do in the seven county metro area. We spend a lot of our money in the metro area as well, whether it's, you know, our groceries, filling up with gas, our entertainment, other necessities, things like that. So we all consider ourselves part of the metro area. The U.S. Census considers us part of the metro area, but when it comes to state funding, you know, the state of Minnesota, or school funding, the state of Minnesota does not. It's frustrating to know that while our district has done a great job making cuts to control costs or doesn't offer certain opportunities or programs for our students, other districts, including some just a few miles down the road, are able to offer these programs for our kids, you know, because they receive higher funding. You know, is it right that other schools can offer a higher ratio of nurses and counselors for their students, or that some districts can afford to purchase thousands of mobile devices such as iPads for their students? For me personally, having a daughter in college and another student, you know, currently in high school with college on the horizon, college costs are a huge expense, you know, but I wonder why Some districts or schools are able to offer more AP advanced placement classes or the college and school courses than other districts are. You know, this is something that affects the students and the families on a financial basis. It gives students from other districts a little bit more of an advantage, having the opportunity to earn more credits towards college, you know, before they even get there, and the opportunity to save thousands of dollars prior, you know, in their college costs, an opportunity that our district and others like us throughout the state don't have at the same level. So I understand that, you know, some districts have unique circumstances that others may not and need additional financial support, but when we have situations where some districts receive thousands of dollars more than other districts, and in some cases almost twice as much, you know, I think we can agree that maybe some changes might be needed, and this is one way to address that. I also understand that education funding is an enormous topic and one that won't be solved overnight. My hope is that you, as our state leaders, will take a step back and take a hard look, you know, at how this issue has grown over the years, and begin to take steps to correct the inequity that has developed. This is an issue that is not specific to the St. Michael Albertville School District. This is an issue that impacts the entire state. So I appreciate your time today, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nickemeyer.
And Mr. Chairman, I have another superintendent to make some comments today. Superintendent Bezik, who is from the Elk River School District.
Superintendent, welcome back.
Good. Welcome, Pastor. We're back. Good morning. Thank you, Chair Wieger, members of the committee. Once again, you know, we're back looking at this equity issue. With me, I have my business manager, Greg Hine, who will add a few comments here. Demographically, you know, we're the eighth largest district in the state, 13,000 kids. We deal with five counties, 15 communities. And we have a lot of similar issues to St. Michael, but we have some different issues that are unique to our district because about 3,500 of those 13,000 students reside in the metro area in Hennepin and Anoka County, and we receive rural funding rather than the metro stream. So we have a little more urgency, and in our, as they alluded to, there our pay scale, what have you, more emulates the metro than it does the outstate. We just passed a $100 million bond and a $6 million levy. The support in district is fantastic, but we can't keep up with these costs that we have. What's happening to us right now, we're going to see about another 300 to 500 homes built in the district this year. And it's going to put us in the same shape we were back about 15, 20 years ago with this rapid explosive growth that we still haven't recovered from because of our funding stream. I have to cut roughly $2 to $3 million this year out of our budget after we just passed a levy portion that said we're going to reduce class size. But again, it's because of the inequity in the funding streams that we can't keep up with our roll-up costs and what have you in a lot of our contractual agreements here. So what we're looking at is, you know, the whole piece with the metro equity that, you know, we are actually in the seven-county metro, so it lends itself to we should be there. The other piece is with this growth piece, it's going to put us on this cycle again of getting behind the eight ball, and we can't keep up with our rising costs. So at this time, Greg Hine, our business manager, has a few comments to add.
Thank you, and welcome back, Superintendent.
Thank you. I would just reiterate what the superintendents have said here.
Greg
Hine, Executive Director of Business, Elk River School.
Thank you.
We are a people business. About 80% of our general fund unassigned budget is in human capital. We obviously do compete and have to compete with metro school districts for the world-class teachers and administrators in order to keep the great momentum that we have going. Our test scores are soaring. A lot of our contractors that we work with are based in the metro area, so we pay metro rates for that. A lot of our suppliers are metro-based as well. So all of our cost structure looks a lot more like a metro than it does some of our more rural neighbors.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, in closing, for Senate File 96 and asking for your support here, I think it's a broader issue that we deal with. St. Michael Albertville is the very bottom of the per-pupil funding, the lowest, and yet they're right outside the metro area where they have all the same costs, all the same prices, and are significant issues for them. But probably the thing that concerns me the most is that in some of our school districts, parents are enrolling their kids outside the school district when they get to be juniors and seniors because they don't have the opportunities for the extra languages, the advanced placement, the concurrent enrollment, and some of those other issues. So it puts them at a distinct disadvantage for them. And I think those are the issues that really matter to our district. And when the parents in our area see that in Minneapolis-St. Paul they're getting over 14,000 and in their area they're getting 7,500, those are rough numbers, it flies in the face of their sense of equity, that they're all taxpayers and they pay heavily into the tax structure. And what they expect is that the distribution would be equitable. They're very understanding about how things kind of creep in and the inequity kind of goes there, but they have pushed themselves to the limit in regards to the local taxpayers, and so it is time for us to really address this. And, Mr. Chair, there's also been a court case in regards to this, in regards to the Constitution, in the requirement that there be that fair and equitable support for that. So calling attention to both of those things, I'm asking for your support and the support for these students, no matter where they live in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer, and to the testifiers. And before we open it for questions or comments, I'll ask our fiscal analyst, Jay Wilms, to highlight the fiscal note, which is at everyone's table. We also will have these posted there. It's available for the public. Mr. Wilms.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. As you'll see in the fiscal note, the key points here are that this bill would provide $1.8 million in revenue. Can you hear me? No?
A little light, but...
$1.8 million in revenue.
A little closer, Mr. Wilms.
Okay.
Then we can...
All right. So $1.8 million in revenue across 27 districts. Equity has an aid and levy split. The annual aid portion would be approximately $500,000. The annual levy portion would be approximately $1.3 million. Since this bill would be effective in fiscal year 16, the levy would be recognized in fiscal 17 since it's already been paid for the current year. So it would show up as a double levy or a prior year adjustment in fiscal 17.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just if Mr. Arneson could just go through the or point out the information on the run.
Yes, or Mr. Wilms or Arneson, how they'd like to allocate that.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Arneson. Members, so I'm looking at the document. The district run in the upper left-hand corner is marked Cinefile 96 Kiffmeyer run revised 2-2-2015. In essence, when you're trying to reconcile this run with the fiscal note, you'll probably be most interested in looking to the far right-hand columns. And the districts that are marked in those columns receiving a change in their equity revenue relative to the forecast base correspond with the 27 districts indicated in the accompanying fiscal note. Note that because of the way that charter school revenues are calculated, charter schools receive the state average equity revenue. So anytime that equity revenue for a district or a set of districts is changed relative to the forecast, every charter school picks up a little tiny increment of that change because the state average equity revenue for districts is changing. So that's why when you get to the bottom pages of the run, you'll see that charter schools receive a little tiny bump of about $2.50 in state aid.
Mr. Chairman, when I look at the legislation and the new language, which is kind of the important part, on page 2, it says that Minnesota or any school district with any of its area located in any Minnesota county in the Minneapolis-St. Paul.
Excuse me, Senator Stumpf, just make sure everybody's following. We're at page to lines 2.4?
That's correct.
Reading, okay.
And so if we use that that definition, how do we end up picking up districts such as Foley, Annandale, and let's see, some of the districts that are kind of on the outside edge of that area, and I just can't figure out quite how that those two justify each other.
And Senator Sumpter, I believe these would be non-contiguous.
Mr. Chair,
to Metro, but yeah, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, I can understand why that is. The reason for that, though, is that when you have a census, the federal requires that when you hit a certain population, so it is not a mention of necessarily contiguous, though many times it is, but when your population has hit that level, and this actually affected our area also in the area of transportation, because functionally some of these issues touch a variety of ways. And so this is where I was first exposed to this, was actually in transportation because of how it touched our district. But because it is the understanding that metropolitan isn't just our, you know, we've kind of created a certain geography of metropolitan, but they take more of a look at a concentration of population. And the nexus sometimes is direct and other times less so, but it's mainly because of that concentration of population. And it's just one of those definitions that I think more truly reflects the metro sometimes than our basic hardcore county. As when Superintendent Bezik testified, his school district has students that are included in Anoka County, even though we're in Sherburne County. This statistical area comprises both, so it's more of an accurate reflection of the issue.
Just a follow-up question, and I'm not sure there's an answer, but the legislation picks up Malacca as a metropolitan area in the statistical metropolitan area. So how would... and I'm trying to think of a town right next to Malacca.
Princeton.
Mora.
Princeton-Mora.
Is it Mora?
Princeton.
Okay. Anyway, how does the neighboring district to Malacca feel that Malacca is getting this extra money because it's in a metropolitan statistical district?
Mm-hmm.
When they don't. And I think that's the problem that I see. We're just kind of moving that boundary, and it gets so hard to justify.
Well, Mr. Chair,
sorry,
I really appreciate your comment there. When I worked on this language, it had more to my district because it's more common sense. You can see that we are truly very much close to that. But when the language is written, that was the, you might say, a kind of an objective kind of definition, you might say. But when they did the runs, I was surprised too. But that's kind of when they did the runs, and maybe someone who actually did that technical analysis can explain that better than I can. But I was surprised also because my focus was more helping and knowing more about my district than that, but that statistical thing. But Superintendent Bezik may be able to add some comments here for you, Senator Stumpf.
Superintendent.
Chair. Senator Stumpf, the legislation we pushed forward last year began with the issue of location equity. The districts, any district that touched or had any land, Seven County Metro, there was, I believe, 11 or 13 districts that had some portion of land, and that's when we were pushing forward. The rationale was is that we are in the metro area. Our district is physically there, which was pretty well defined and makes sense. With this new definition, though, it goes right to what you're saying there. It's really opens up the broader area to what they would be feeling, just what we're feeling. Why aren't we getting the metro funding? But I actually have kids in Hennepin and Elk County where none of the other districts do. So it's that definition that's the difference in what we were presenting last year and what's on the table this year.
Senator Nino, followed by Clausen.
Senator Stompton, you're going to have that problem no matter what. It's inherent with what we currently have in the law right now. It's going to be inherent in whatever change, unless we eliminate it. It's going to be inherent. Right now, I have one or two school districts that have parts of the metropolitan area, but they're 99% out. And they're in that exact same boat. You know, well, what the heck? You know, why don't want to do it? It's going to exist no matter what we do. The question is, where do we draw those lines?
Noted. Thank you. Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is has to do with the local levy referendums and kind of a three-part question. First of all, is can you share with me the amount of local levy referendum dollars that are on your per pupil unit currently? And then secondly, where does that rank amongst metro districts? We traditionally have, I think it's 68, 69 metro districts. We always use that as a comparison for what are the costs in administration, what are the costs per pupil. And then thirdly, where does that stand in relation to the 27 school districts that we are now going to be adding if this proposal goes through?
Superintendent Beeson.
I refer to the great
Mr.
Chair. Senator Clausen.
I understand you may not have that information at your fingertips, but I think it's important that we take a look at that, so if we could get that.
Mr. Heinen, if you could restate the question in your answers for a moment.
Okay, I believe the question was, as where do we stand with our current referendum, operating referendum, and how does that stack up against other metro districts?
Yes.
I believe that we went into this last fall a per pupil amount of about $679. We did do the location equity conversion, but we did not opt to do the $300 board-approved conversion of that levy. And then just this last fall, we passed about another $409 per pupil unit. Before the passage of that, we were way on the low end of the top 20. As Mark said, we're number 8 in size of the top 20 largest districts, most of which are metro. We were dead last. With the addition of the 400, we're still probably in the lowest quartile. And can you restate the other part of the question?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Clausen.
The third piece was, if you look at the 27 districts that you're looking to adding underneath this, where would you stand in relation to the referendum dollars that have added onto the per pupil unit?
Okay. We haven't, we don't necessarily consider those 27 our peer group for comparison purposes, so I don't have that data off the top of my head.
Thank you. And follow up, Senator Clausen.
Thank you. Quick adding. So basically, you've got $1,088 that you've added onto the per pupil. That's your total amount through local referendums.
Yep. Mr. Hine? States, yes. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Superintendent Beasick wants to add something, and then I think also Superintendent Bailey, if you can.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'd like to add is the referendum that we just passed, we passed a bond and a $6 million operating levy. To the construction costs that are coming here. Those are not additional dollars that I'm going to be able to use. It's all operational costs.
Thank you. And Superintendent Bailey.
Yes, thank you. In regard to the question about our specific district, with the location, optional location revenue, optional revenue that was passed and then the board approved, our previous levy was $695. And then our board did choose to added additional $24 to go to that $724, which in essence is the $424 from a location equity revenue or local option revenue, and then the $300 board option. So we're at $724. I'm not quite sure, but my understanding is statewide. I don't have the statistics from the school district you mentioned, but I think statewide the average is somewhere between $1,000 to $1,100 for levies. So we're well under that. one of the reasons. I mean, we've had two things similar to Elk River. We had significant growth, and so our taxpayers went out and were bonded at a very high level for new schools over the years to address that growth. And then our referendum revenue is less than others. And one of the reasons is that despite the efforts by the legislature over the last few years, which we very much welcome, to increase equalization, our taxpayers usually will spend anywhere from 2 to 2.5 times more on property taxes for the same dollar than some of the school districts in the metro area, just by the basis that we have much less commercial valuation. So the burden on our taxpayers to go much higher would be quite significant, and I'm not sure it's successful.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's an important consideration here. It takes a lot more from our property taxpayers to raise the same amount of money than in other districts where they have a larger property tax base, a higher base. Individual taxpayers make pay less on a per person or per household basis than what we have to do here, and so that makes it also difficult. Mm-hmm.
Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe we could ask fiscal analysis to do a look at the 27 districts in comparison to these two, if we could.
Okay. That's noted, and we'll have follow-up on that.
Mr. Chair, I'd also ask Senator that Kiffmeyer. If you do that, you include something that balances out in regards to their ANTC, their adjusted net tax capacity, or some sort of measure that also will show the corresponding effort to raise those dollars, that you compare that. I think that would be helpful.
That'll be done. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, and maybe staff can answer this. I can't quite get this into my brain about how the referendum levy has an implication for equity funding, because I thought it was based on the salaries and housing and costs of having, you know, teachers and people's expenditures are much higher. So I can understand that part, if your costs of hiring teachers and the housing and other things cost a lot more money in some places than others in the metropolitan area generally. But I don't quite understand why the referendum is considered in this, if someone could answer me.
Mr. Arneson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson. So general education equity revenue, the section that we're amending in this bill, doesn't take into account local cost differences of the measure. The inputs to equity revenue, the equity revenue formula here, are our referendum revenues. So in very rough terms, a district that receives lower referendum revenue per pupil will receive a higher general education equity allowance per pupil, and vice versa. So the equity revenue, general education equity revenue section is intended in very broad terms to equalize disparities in referendum revenue per pupil.
Thank you. Superintendent
Bezek. Senator Kiffmeyer, did Superintendent Bezek have a comment on the question?
Yes, he does, yes. Mr. Chairman.
Superintendent.
Mr. Chair, just maybe a 50,000-foot clarification on this.
Bring your mic over so they can hear you.
Maybe just a broader clarification on your question. I always refer to the Gold Coast over there in Minnetonka, Edina, Wayzata, what have you. Those districts have about $20 million more dollars a year to run their districts than I do because of the levy implications. It is so much easier for them to pass these excess levy, what used to be called the excess levies, than it is for people in our district, because they have these little things called shopping malls and industry down there that create so much property wealth that we don't have, and so the brunt of it falls on our taxpayers. Our taxpayers are paying great taxes. They're paying their fair share, but our taxes are going, like St. Michael, going into defer maintenance and construction costs and what have you, where these other metro districts, their buildings are paid for. They're putting it right back in the classroom, which really causes an opportunity gap, for districts like us, because we're trying to put food on the table, and they're offering international baccalaureate, languages throughout the curriculum, you know, what have you. They get the extras, and we don't get that. And even this year, with the passage of our levy portion, it reduced our equity revenue. So just because we passed it to operate our buildings that we're going to be building, we take a hit on the equalization.
Senator Bonoff, there's been reference to the Gold Coast.
I'm sorry.
Equity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I always like to just take the opportunity when comments are made like that to just bring a broader perspective. Because, number one, I do believe in an equal, excellent education for every child in the state of Minnesota. And so anything we can do within the formula to have that happen, I'm for. And I'm, you know, maybe a believer, probably not shared by most at the table, that in some ways we'd be better off if we drew a line in the sand and said every new dollar from now on would just be a dollar, a dollar, a dollar. Senator Kiffmeyer knows that I feel pretty strongly about that. With regard to my districts, I have seen the runs when you put in all the referendum, and you're right, man, they are so able to pass those referendums. Since I can remember, and I live there, you know, always, they've always passed them, and so that is very different, and there's wide property tax wealth, so I concur with that. But when you put all of the monies together, state aid, referendum, Title I, all the dollars, the districts that I represent actually are in some ways in the middle, some ways a little lower than that in terms of the total dollars, because they get far less state aid because of the way the formulas go. So they don't view it the way you see it. And I was just at their one of the school districts' legislative breakfast just a few days ago, and they were very concerned about the governor's proposal not having enough on the formula and talking about the cuts they were going to have to make. And so I promise you, and then Hopkins, where my kids went, where they're now, you know, huge percent free and reduced lunch, they just don't see it that way, even though they do, in fact, pass those referendums. And the runs are interesting when you add them all together and see where those school districts fall.
Okay. Mr. Thanks, Chairman, I would concur with Senator Bonhoff that on a go-forward basis, and you and I have had this conversation, that what we also find is that all the categoricals, because many of the formulas are tied in to that basic, and so the spread gets ever wider. But probably the bigger thing is that, Senator Bonhoff's in your district, you have more of a stable number, for the most part, the pool of students to educate. In our districts that we're dealing with here, it is a growth area. Matter of fact, explosive growth, that we've talked about it. So in Elk River School District, they're going to be adding every year about 300-400 students, which means you've got to have buildings, and then you have to deal with many of those kind of things. And our taxpayers, our local taxpayers, have been really good about saying, we recognize that. We live here, we're there, they're doing that, but it's the operating and the course offerings and things that really are dependent upon that. And so whatever we are trying to give you one option. Maybe there's a definition that can be refined that maybe works with it better. Maybe there's another way to address this issue. But the gap continues to get wider and wider and wider. And as we've seen with the court before, this is an issue that is recognized and that we as the legislature need to consider that. And this is probably the gap has gotten so far now that it is time that we need to take that action once again.
Thank you. Senator Dahl, then I'm going to ask if anyone in the audience would like to address the committee. Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. Sounds like there's a lot of support for my facilities bill here.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the committee on Senate File 96, which we'll be laying over following our discussion? We'll note we do have letters in support from the Service Employees International Union. Senator Kiffmeyer, there you go. And we have one from Big Lake Schools from the Interim Superintendent Thorson. So.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We appreciate very much your time and your attention.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer, the testifiers, especially the parent, Mr. Nick Meyer, for making the journey here, and we'll lay this over for possible inclusion, the direction to staff to get additional information, and undoubtedly a discussion from some of those districts up by Malacca and others as to the impact of this and how it might work out. But we'll continue to review this, and we appreciate your pointing this out to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to Senate File 217, Senator Weber, and then we're going to get Senator Dahl to your Bill 133. And we'll ask Superintendent Hope to join Senator Weber. And before us is Senate File 217, which also is familiar. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm pleased to be here again in front of you to talk about the Hendricks School District and the topic of Senate File 217. Previously, the city or the school district of Hendricks had an interdistrict cooperative agreement with Ivanhoe School District, under which which also gave them a shared exemption from the Minnesota-South Dakota Reciprocity Agreement. In their arrangement, the city of Hendricks, or the school district in Hendricks, provided the elementary facilities and the city of Ivanhoe the high school facilities. And in June of 2011, Hendricks received notice from Ivanhoe that they wished to cease that arrangement. At that point, Hendricks had the option of either consolidating with Ivanhoe or adding back the other grades into their operation, which is the decision that they chose to do. But as a result of that, they then lost the exemption that they had from the reciprocity agreement. They have been continuing on, been managing to experience some growth in their school district. But at this time, what they're asking for is special legislation to grant them the exemption that they once had in their shared arrangement. I have with me today Superintendent Houck from Hendricks, who can give you a little more information as to how this exemption would affect them.
Thank you. Welcome, Superintendent.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I am Bruce Houck, superintendent from Hendricks Public School. And to give you an idea how close to South Dakota we are, we have a golf course, and if I slice it 20 yards, I'm in South Dakota. So,
has that happened?
It does, unfortunately, yes. Too much. But we have just started our high school, and a lot of our students prior had gone to South Dakota instead of going to Ivanhoe for their high school career. Now that we have the high school back, obviously we are responsible for those students that are going to South Dakota. It does have a huge impact on us, and I do believe that we're probably a little bit better negotiators than the state of Minnesota in regards to we would like to be able to negotiate the tuition with those school districts. We know them personally. Our boards meet. They know each other. We move kids back and forth over the border. So obviously we have a very good relationship with our neighboring districts. There's also, I know of two other districts that are exempt, Lake Benton and Browns Valley, both also have the exemption at which they are able to negotiate with their neighboring school districts instead of having the state have an effect. I feel a little, after listening to the previous bill, and they're talking $8 million, that's more than my operating budget. But you see that the impact is $84,000 to our district, for years going out. To us, that's a huge amount of money. We are still responsible for those children who go across the district line. They could come back any time, and we would have to provide those services to them. And we are seeing growth, not huge growth as 400 students, we are seeing 10 to 15 students a year. For us, that's very significant. And so as these dollars are discussed, it makes a big difference for us in regards to continued operation of our school. My board is very conservative. To give you an idea, we're still in a building of 1923. Our taxpayers are more than happy to give us operating referendum dollars. We have over $2,000 a student. So our public is in support of our school. They're doing everything they can, but we do need the opportunity to do the negotiations with reciprocity and for us to take control. The state of Minnesota still hasn't got it figured out anyway. MDE, we run a targeted services program. If you've ever heard the checks in the mail, we've heard that. Because there's no code for us. We also have an ALC at which we have students. Again, the checks in the mail. We'll make the adjustment at the end of the year, and we never see the adjustment. And so this is the best way for us to make those, to get those adjustments taken care of, make us responsible for that instead of the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Superintendent. We do have a fiscal note as well, and also the amendment on the tuition reciprocity agreement of April 1, 2009. Mr. Wilms, on the fiscal note, just highlight that again.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and committee members, you might recognize the bill from last session, and actually the fiscal note is from last session, but it gives an approximate cost of what the proposal would cost. It's approximately $80,000 in increased state aid appropriations due to Minnesota students staying in Minnesota, and then there's also a local cost of approximately $250,000 in levy. But a fiscal note is pending. I've asked them to price it on the February forecast, though.
Thank you. Questions, comments? Members, Senator Claussen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I have is, why not consolidate?
We've taken it to the public a number of years ago. The public overwhelmingly voted no. They do not want to. They want to have their own identity. They want to have their own school district. And so they are not interested in consolidating with anyone. They feel that it is important to provide education in small class sizes. And our district has set that up accordingly. And it's hard to argue when they're willing to pay, you know, over $2,000 a student for referendum dollars.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Senate File 217? Members, we did pass this last year. It was included in our omnibus bill. There being no further discussion, Senator Weber, I'll have this laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Superintendent Houck, Senator Weber, thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's laid over. Next, we have Senate File 133, Senator Dahl. Your co-author, Senator Pratt, is at a breakfast meeting. He wanted to share his strong support for it, and hopefully he'll have a chance to get here at some point during the presentation. So, Senator Dahl and your testifiers, please join us. And I believe we have one author's amendment, Senator Dahl.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an author's amendment. I'd like to move that.
Okay. A1. We have the A1 author's amendment. Everyone has a copy. It changes an amount to $10,022,000 from $10 million. On the A1 amendment, authors, all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Carried. We now have Senate File 133 as amended. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Of course, last year there was an appropriation for teacher development and evaluation revenue of about $10 million. And the specific language of that bill said that would go to school districts, intermediate school districts, or charter schools that don't have an alternative professional pay system agreement. And so there was much concern, obviously, from our cooperatives and education districts that they felt that they were omitted from receiving that revenue. And we tried to work. It wasn't our. I don't believe that was the intent. That was not my bill, but I don't believe that was the intent. We actually tried to work with the Department of Education to prove legislative intent that we wanted every school district, including the co-ops, to be included in that. So Ultimately, they ruled no, that especially there's a specific statute that says it precludes cooperatives and education districts from receiving state aid unless specifically identified in statute to receive it. So what Senate File 133 does is quite simply adds the few words, educational cooperative education districts to receive that funding for teacher development and evaluation revenue. And what the amendment does, since the $10 million, I understand, is already allocated, $22,000 would be the cost to make sure that we include these particular districts. So I'll turn it over. This bill actually was brought to me by Darren Kermes. He's from the Southwest Metro Educational Cooperative, and I'll ask him to say a few other words.
Thank you. Mr. Kermes.
Thank you, Chairman Wigger and members of the committee. My name is Darren Kermes. I'm the Executive Director of the Southwest Metro Educational Cooperative. To give you a geographic sense, we cover basically Scott and Carver counties, everything from Prior Lake Savage, Shakopee, New Prague, over to Waconia, Norwood Young America, Tri-City United, Eastern Carver County Schools. We have 10 member districts. Last year, we served students from 62 Minnesota school districts in our programs. We provide primarily things like intense level special education services, adult basic education, current technical education, alternative education, including online and a teen parent program. So that's our little scope of the world in our corner. I do have the Department of Education put together a map, and I do have copies if you'd like this, but to give you a rough idea, these are the three existing intermediate districts, and this is our cooperative in purple here that covers Carver and Scott counties, part of Rice and Lesura counties.
Yes, if that could be distributed, if there's copies.
Certainly.
Get that. Okay. Proceed.
Thank you. We were actually thrilled when we saw the teacher development and evaluation revenue last year. We just assumed that we would be part of that. We were a little surprised when I made contact with the Department of Education and found out that we weren't eligible. In all honesty, after discussing that via email with Tom Melcher and others at the department, I do agree with their analysis. There is a specific statute that requires us to be explicitly named in order to be included. So I believe the department's interpretation is correct. However, I don't believe that the end result is correct. Our teachers are represented by Education Minnesota. They hold the same licenses as all other teachers in the state. We are required by law to have the same teacher development and evaluation package, and yes, we did develop this last year, and it was approved by our board. We have high-quality teachers providing services. We're exactly the same, certainly, as the intermediate districts in that regard and the other districts, but yet we, by omission, are not included in being able to access this revenue to fulfill this obligation for our teacher development and evaluation planning. We are very similar, then, to the other cooperatives and education districts across the state in that regard.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Wigger, senators and committee. My name is Jeremy Kovash, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Service Cooperatives. In addition to our collaborative work with the Minnesota Service Cooperative statewide network, I'm the executive director of Lakes Country Service Cooperative, and I work with schools in West Central Minnesota, 36 school districts, and a small amount of private and charter schools as well, and we are headquartered in Fergus Falls. The service cooperatives were created in Statute 123A21, and we are the established regional delivery system providing professional training, coaching, consulting, and a broad array of shared services to a vast majority of school districts across Minnesota. Our statewide network operates self-sufficiently in partnership with local, regional, state, and national entities. Together, our network enhances student success by supporting schools and meeting state and local objectives by providing access to high-quality academic programming, school improvement support, and professional development. At our agency in Lakes Country, I'd just like to focus on three different areas of that we do have licensed teachers, as my colleague Darren presented as well. We have 30 teachers in the early childhood areas working with parent education, school readiness. Those, again, are licensed teachers licensed by the state of Minnesota. These partnerships provide regional access to expert teachers, continuous opportunities, and significant cost efficiencies for our membership. In addition, we administer a shared alternative learning program in Moorhead. We have an alternative school. We have 8 licensed teachers in that school, and again, that's a shared alternative program with schools in our region to provide innovative, efficient alternative programming in partnership with 6 of our school districts along the North Dakota border. Finally, we employ a host of other educators, trainers, consultants, and educational coaches in technology, career and technical education, data training, and special education. As a whole, we employ about 55 staff members and have the equivalence of 40 full-time equivalent licensed educators. Collectively, as a whole, the Minnesota Service Cooperatives, 9 of us, employ approximately 220 licensed educators working in collaboration with our schools and teachers across Minnesota. These teachers are, as Darren said, subject to the same requirements under the teacher development and evaluation laws passed in last year and are all Minnesota teachers. On behalf of the Board of Directors of the Service Cooperatives and our Lakes Country Service Cooperative, we ask for your support of Senate File 133. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to share this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Kovash.
I believe we have one more speaker, yes. Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Wieger and members of the committee. I am Dwayne Borgeson from Benton Stearns Education District in Sartell, and we serve the districts of Sartell, St. Stephen, Sauk Rapids, Rice, Foley, Kimball, Holdingford, and Ricori. And I'm also speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Education District Association. The Minnesota Education District Association has 12 member ed districts, and we are mostly more rural in nature, provide services very similar, though, to the intermediate districts and the cooperative that Mr. Kermis spoke of. The 12 education districts serve approximately 80,000 students indirectly and about 6,100 directly in education district programs, and there are about 550 licensed staff in those 12 education districts. We provide a wide range of services in the areas of special education, including itinerant service such as school psychologists, occupational therapy, physical therapy, vision services, services for kids that are deaf, hard of hearing, assistive technology, so on and so forth. We also run separate sight programs for kids with severe disabilities. We do third-party billing, medical assistance billing for our member districts, and we do considerable amounts of staff development for our districts. Also, education districts run alternative learning centers. They provide technology services, curriculum services, interactive TV services, and some Carl Perkins grant management as well. Each education district is governed by a board made up of members of its member district. Most education district staff is also part of Education Minnesota. At Benton Stearns Education District, we have 37 and a half full-time equivalent staff, licensed full-time equivalent staff. Again, as Mr. Kermis did, we had to develop our plan last year. The additional funding for activities around our plan right now comes from our member districts. It would be extremely helpful for our education district to receive the funding for teacher development and evaluation.
And thank you for the efforts of the co-ops. They're much appreciated. And the whole issue, I believe, started with a letter to Senator Dahl, Senator Pratt, and to the area reps and asking for clarification that was needed. As you mentioned, the Department of Education, I'm not sure if they're here. It's my understanding they're not opposed to this, but if they want to enter anything on the record, we could. But, of course, you had sought funds through that, and that's why we're here on this issue. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify, and then we'll open it up for comments from committee members. Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This originally started off, and I apologize for being late. I don't know if Mr. Kermes addressed this, but this started off as a legislative intent question. Did the legislature intend for co-ops and education districts to be included in this type of funding? And Mr. Chair, the discussion we had with Senator Dahl was, I can't see how we wouldn't have intended co-ops to be a part of this, their staff need to be at the same standard as any other teacher, and we should expect them to be in front of at the same level as every other teacher. This is not about trying to, you know, one of the things I've always said in my corporate career is that everybody deserves a fair and critical evaluation, critical and not in the sense that it's objective. And I think this, the teacher evaluation legislation goes a long way in starting to do that, but we've got to make sure that we're making all of our teachers held to the same standard or trying to reach the same standard, that we have the best teachers with professional development plans that meet their needs in front of our students in order for them to be successful. So I strongly support the bill, and I hope we'll move it forward as quickly as possible.
Great. Well, Senator Klassen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I owe the intermediate and districts an apology because this was my bill last year. and was not our intent. We had quite a coalition. It must have been 10 different groups that analyzed this, so I apologize for overlooking that. The question I have is, though, when we developed that bill last year, we used a formula on a per-teacher basis to arrive at that $10 million, and I'm wondering if you used, we're comparing apples to apples, that we're using the same formula for this proposal.
We're going to ask Mr. Wilms, our fiscal analyst.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the author's A1 amendment would increase the aid entitlement to $10,022,000. Without that amendment, the 302 per FTE would have to be prorated down, but with the author's amendment, it will stay at 302 per FTE distributed.
Okay. Mr. Kermes.
Chairman Wigger, members, first of all, Senator Klassen, thank you for the word. We don't believe that there was an intent of an oversight. We just think there was a simple oversight. I did correspond via email with Tom Melcher yesterday in preparation for today, and on the department's website, he pointed me to, there's a specific page showing the revenue expended. Fully expended out of the $10 million, $9,869,802 are accounted for, which when you factor in then the teachers in the education districts and the cooperatives that weren't included, the FTE there brings us to the $10,020,000 figure. So that's where we're that close with the existing appropriation. It's my understanding it's simply adding it was at the $10 million market, it was slightly more than was needed to fully do everyone excluding all of us. If you add us in, it takes about 20,000 more.
Thank you. Further comments or questions on a legislative work? Pardon me.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stone.
I said that's pretty close for legislative work.
Yes.
Exactly.
Thank you, Senator Stump. I'll take that as a compliment.
We'll lay this over shortly, but first, while Mr. Kermes is up there, I understand we may see a proposal in the near future regarding your co-op proposing to be an intermediate, or is that just a rumor?
No, yes. Senator Wigger and members, yes, that is true. So you may see a revisitation of the map in front of you coming forward. We would very much like to be considered, and Senators Pratt and Dahl, we're working with, again, to be allowed to, if our member districts so vote, to become an intermediate district, the fourth intermediate district covering the southwestern corner of the metropolitan area.
Good. Well, thank you. Senator Dahl, Senator Pratt, testifiers, Senate File 133 as amended will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Members, the next meeting will be Thursday, and we have Senate File 298, Senator Stump, temporary teaching licensing extension. And we may have one other related bill that we have decided, but on that same subject, you'll know by tomorrow
I believe that that's posted, but still awaiting on that. And then for the following week, I don't know if we have confirmation from the House yet as to whether we're going to have the joint meeting. Okay, members, I want you to know I had hoped we could have a joint meeting with the House to talk about testing and teacher development, evaluation, QComp, you know, putting those together. But apparently that's been declined. But I did seek that. And I reiterate, I've asked to meet on any subjects, you know, that, you know, we could put together, but we did try. So we'll discuss those subjects, but amongst us for that date next week. Any other questions, comments on where we're at this point? Okay. Not this committee stands adjourned. Wow.